We had a little bit of trouble with the mic this morning, so if it starts acting up again, I might take it off. But we're continuing to go through 2 Kings right now on Sunday nights. And tonight we're going to be looking at chapters 9 and 10 of 2 Kings, chapters 9 and 10, looking at Jehu. For quite some time now, we've followed Elisha and the things that Elisha has done. And in the midst of all the evil and the darkness, we really see Elisha as the light, as the good news and otherwise bad news. And we're not going to see as much of Elisha from here on out. It's going to go back to the kings and the things that the kings are doing. If you remember, there's the kings in the north and the kings in the south. And so now we're going to return to the kings with this looming question of, when will this eternal king come? When will he be here? So we're going to continue looking at those kings for a while as we think about Jehu tonight as being the next king that we're going to focus on in these chapters. Jehu is talked about back in 1 Kings. In 1 Kings 19, it talks about Jehu, who will be appointed as the king. Elijah is spoken to there in verses 15 and 16. The Lord said to him, "Go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you have arrived, you shall anoint Hazael king over Aram. And Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abel-Mehaloh, you shall anoint as prophet in your place." And we saw that Elisha carries on doing what Elijah was told to do. Elisha really continues the work of Elijah. And Elisha is the one who says Hazael will be king. We talked about him last week. If you remember, he goes and suffocates the king that was. And then tonight we're going to see Jehu become the king. So this is talked about all the way back in 1 Kings 19. And then there's something else that said in 1 Kings that hasn't happened yet. In chapter 21 and verse 23, of Jezebel also has the Lord spoken, saying, "The dogs will eat Jezebel in the district of Jezreel." So we haven't yet had Jehu as king, and we haven't yet had Jezebel be eaten by the dogs. And that's going to happen as we look at these verses tonight. I can remember when I was a kid, if we ever had a Bible class about Jezebel being eaten by the dogs. I don't know if a moment ago I may have said Jezebel eat. If I worded it wrong, forgive me. I'll have to go back and listen. Jezebel's eaten by the dogs. But I remember if that was ever brought up, I just thought that was, you know, just the most fascinating story to talk about. But that's what we're going to see tonight. And these chapters in 2 Kings are really some bloody, kind of gory chapters as we look at 9 and 10. And so we'll cover that tonight and then try to figure out, what do we make of this king Jehu? What are we supposed to do with him? So that's what we're going to look at this evening. So he's going to be appointed king. Elisha sends a servant to say that he will be king. We're going to just kind of move around a little bit. We're not going to look at all the verses. But in 2 Kings 9, starting in verse 7, Jehu is told that this is what his task is. This is what he's going to be doing, what he's told to do. "You shall strike the house of Ahab, your master, that I may avenge the blood of my servants, the prophets, and the blood of all the servants of the Lord at the hand of Jezebel. For the whole house of Ahab shall perish. And I will cut off from Ahab every male person, both bond and free in Israel. I will make the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and the house of Baasha, the son of Ahijah. The dogs shall eat Jezebel in the territory of Jezreel, and none shall bury her." Then he opened the door and fled. So the whole house of Ahab shall perish, and the dogs shall eat Jezebel. She won't be buried. And that's going to be what keeps these chapters moving along. is the whole house of Ahab is to be destroyed and the dogs are going to eat Jezebel. So that's what we're watching for to unfold under the reign of King Jehu. But there are already some kings. There's a king in the north and there's a king in the south. And so the first thing we see is this encounter between Jehu and the kings that are already kings. So he sets off and he drives toward where the kings presently are. And they see this person coming. And they send somebody to him a couple of times, trying to figure out who is this person who's driving toward us. And I liked 2 Kings 9 and verse 20, how they identify who it is. The watchman reported, he came even to them and he did not return. And the driving is like the driving of Jehu, the son of Nimshi, for he drives furiously. Some translations, I believe, say he drives like a madman. Maybe there's been times where you've been out on the road and you see somebody and you say, oh yeah, well I know who's driving that vehicle. That's so-and-so. They drive furiously. I know that's them. Well, Jehu's coming and they say, well, we know it's him by how he's driving. This is Jehu. So he comes and now we have this showdown between him and the kings who are already in power. Then Joram said, get ready. And they made his chariot ready. Joram, king of Israel, and Ahaziah, king of Judah, went out, each in his chariot. And they went out to meet Jehu and found him in the property of Naboth the Jezreelite. So now we have our three powerful people. Here's our showdown. The king of the north, the king of the south, and Jehu, the one who has been anointed to be king, chosen to be king. Well, in verse 24, he takes out the first part of the competition. Jehu drew his bow with his full strength and shot Joram between his arms. And the arrow went through his heart, and he sank in his chariot. Well, the king of Judah was also with them, and he is going to fall as well. In verse 27, when Ahaziah, the king of Judah, saw this, he fled by the way of the garden house. And Jehu pursued him and said, shoot him too in the chariot. So they shot him in the ascent of Gur, which is at Ibleam. He fled to Megiddo and died there. Now both of these kings have been taken out. But we still have Jezebel. Jezebel's still around. Jezebel just doesn't seem like a very likable character. We're about to encounter Jezebel again, and if we read through the text, it says that she's up in the window. And when she sees Jehu coming, she pretty much calls him a murderer. And she says, well, what are you doing? What have you come for? And there's some other people up there with her. And Jehu sees them. And again, it doesn't seem like people really like Jezebel that much. And so now here's the opportunity to get rid of Jezebel. Starting in verse 32, then he lifted up his face to the window and said, who is on my side? Who? And two or three officials looked down at him. Something about their look must have indicated that they were on his side. He said, throw her down. So they threw her down, and some of her blood was sprinkled on the wall and on the horses, and he trampled her underfoot. When he came in, he ate and drank and said, see now to this cursed woman and bury her, for she is a king's daughter. They went to bury her, but they found nothing more of her than the skull and the feet and the palms of her hands. Therefore they returned and told him. And he said, this is the word of the Lord which he spoke by his servant Elijah the Tishbite, saying, in the property of Jezreel the dogs shall eat the flesh of Jezebel. And the corpse of Jezebel will be as dung on the face of the field in the property of Jezreel. So they cannot say, this is Jezebel. So Jezebel has met her end. Jehu was told to get rid of the house of Ahab. And we find out that there's still some people around. Ahab has some sons. And these sons are being taken care of by some of the officials. So Jehu sends a letter to them, and then he sends another letter. And this bloody chapter continues. Chapter 10 and verse 6. Then he wrote a letter to them a second time, saying, "If you are on my side, and you will listen to my voice, take the heads of the men, your master's sons, and come to me at Jezreel tomorrow about this time." Now the king's sons, 70 persons, were with the great men of the city who were rearing them. When the letter came to them, they took the king's sons and slaughtered them, 70 persons, and put their heads in baskets, and sent them to him at Jezreel. When the messenger came and told him, saying, "They have brought the heads of the king's sons," he said, "Put them in two heaps at the entrance of the gate until morning." It continues on in verse 11. So Jehu killed all who remained of the house of Ahab in Jezreel, and all his great men and his acquaintances and his priests, until he left him without a survivor. And as we keep reading, the blood continues to flow through this chapter. It almost seems like maybe he's getting a bit, maybe kind of carried away with this, almost maybe a bit bloodthirsty. In verse 13, Jehu met the relatives of Ahaziah, king of Judah, and he hasn't been told to take out that family, and said, "Who are you?" And they answered, "We are the relatives of Ahaziah, and we have come down to greet the sons of the king and the sons of the queen mother." He said, "Take them alive." So they took them alive and killed them at the pit of Beth Eked, 42 men, and he left none of them. Well, now Jehu sets his sight on the Baal worship. And he seems a bit what we would call deceptive about how he's going to get rid of the bells. In verse 18, then Jehu gathered all the people and said to them, "Ahab served Baal a little, Jehu will serve him much. Now summon all the prophets of Baal, all his worshipers and all his priests. Let no one be missing, for I have a great sacrifice for Baal. Whoever is missing shall not live." But Jehu did it in cunning so that he might destroy the worshipers of Baal. Then they went in to offer sacrifices and burnt offerings. Now Jehu had stationed for himself 80 men outside, and he had said, "The one who permits any of the men whom I bring into your hands to escape shall give up his life in exchange." So he says, all the worshipers of Baal come, and I'm going to serve Baal. And if you don't come to this, then you're not going to live. There's going to be a great sacrifice to Baal. So everybody come who's associated with Baal. Well, of course, the opposite is true. All the people who come to worship Baal, they're killed. And that's how he goes about reforming trying to eradicate the Baal worship. Well, it's a little difficult to know what to do with Jehu here. As we come to the end of this, he really receives what you might call a mixed evaluation. In verses 28 through 31, "Thus Jehu eradicated Baal out of Israel. However, as for the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel sin, from these Jehu did not depart, even the golden calves that were at Bethel and that were at Dan. The Lord said to him, 'Because you have done well in executing what is right in my eyes, and have done to the house of Ahab according to all that was in my heart, your sons of the fourth generation shall sit on the throne of Israel.' But Jehu was not careful to walk in the law of the Lord, the God of Israel, with all his heart. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, which he made Israel sin." So he did this, and this was good. However, he should have also done this. And he did what was, he fulfilled his duties in regards to this, but he didn't do this. So it's good, but not all the way good. Kind of what you might call a mixed review. And elsewhere in the Old Testament, Jehu does not receive a good remembrance of his time as king. In the book of Hosea, Hosea begins by talking about the names of the children and the significance. In chapter 1 and verse 4, and the Lord said to him, "Name him Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will punish the house of Jehu for the bloodshed of Jezreel. And I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel." So here in Hosea, Jehu's not remembered favorably. It talks about punishing the house of Jehu for what occurs in Jezreel, the bloodshed of Jezreel. That's what we've been talking about tonight, is the things that take place in that area. So what do we do with Jehu? He gets rid of the Baal worship, but he doesn't get rid of all the idol worship. And even in getting rid of Baal worship, he says, "I'm going to worship Baal and serve Baal. Come to me, we'll have a great Baal sacrifice." He gets rid of the family of Ahab, but he does kill others in the process of that. When I look at Jehu, it seems that we have somebody he's very zealous. He's very zealous in going about doing what it is he's been instructed to do. But he almost seems to get what we might call tunnel vision. He is really focused on the house of Ahab and destroying the house of Ahab, and he's going to carry that out. But if anybody else gets in his path in the process of that, they're going to get destroyed too. And he's really focused on Baal. But there's all this other idolatry as well that goes overlooked. Can we ever be guilty of something like that? Being really focused on something, and the thing we're focused on is a good thing, is a thing we're trying to do to fulfill what God has told us to do. And maybe we can get so fixated that there's also these other things out here that we can neglect or look over or maybe not have the right attitude about. We all can probably recall things we are aware of, things that we've been told about, where maybe we or somebody else has been really focused on something, and it's a good focus to have, but we miss the big picture. We miss other things that are important too. I've heard stories about fist fights breaking out in men's business meetings. Somebody is really adamant about a particular position, and this is really important, and we need to do this. In so much so that we're willing to fight with somebody about how to interpret the love and mercy of Jesus, or whatever it might be. We can become really focused on something and we miss some other things. And when we think about Jehu, it just seems that he is that sort of a person. He was told to carry this out, and he carried this out, but what about other things that he should have been doing? In the time of Jesus, we see the Pharisees. Were the Pharisees zealous about God's law and doing what they understood or what they thought they ought to be doing? Well, they were very zealous people. They were zealous people. They wanted to uphold the law as they understood it. They were so zealous that they wanted to have Jesus put to death. because he didn't fit with what they thought the Messiah was supposed to be. They got really fixated on things and then missed the big picture. And what Jesus tells them is that it's good to be focused on things. It's good to pay attention to the details of things. But they also need to pay attention to things like justice and mercy and faithfulness. And for me personally, when I read through this with Jehu, it makes me reflect on whether I can ever be guilty of that, of really getting fixated on something, but then missing other things in the process, or getting really focused on the details about something, which is good to be focused on details, but then to miss things like justice or mercy or faithfulness. So we need to be people who see the big picture, see things in light of the big picture, and pay attention to all things. Pay attention to getting rid of the Baals, but the other idols as well. And Jehu, he got this right, but then he got the other thing wrong. And it should make us reflect on where it might be the case in our lives that can occur. Just because we're right about this thing, we could also be wrong about the other things. And it should cause all of us to reflect on that and where we stand in regard to all that God has told us to do, all that God expects of us, and treating all of it seriously. We always conclude our service with an invitation. If there is anybody here that has a need of the church, whether that be to respond to the gospel with baptism, having your sins forgiven, begin living a new life, or if there's anything else that we can help you with, we want to pay attention to all of God's commands and treat all of them as we should. So if we can help you with that, please let us know as we stand and sing.